It is always a very big pleasure to chat to Marlon Chevalier, property attorney, and mindfulness about what happens during level four rules mean for tenants and for landlords. And does this mean that once we move from level five lockdown to level four last week as of the 1st of May, that people will be permitted to move home? And it's a question which tenants, new homeowners, landlords and removals companies desperately want to have answered. Property lawyer Marlon Chevalier joins me on the line this evening to answer all your queries and questions. Marlon, I hope you and the family is doing well. Good evening to you.
Good evening, Zane. Sorry I can't be there in person as I was last time, but happy to impart some information live on air with you today.
The nice thing about this, we've got making up to do, so you will have to promise me a live interview at some stage when we get down to level one or level two. Marlon, how does level four affect the real estate industry and especially estate agents?
Of course, and that's a burning question. It's one we're getting quite a bit of, Zane. I think the short answer is not really much. You know, as much as I would want the real estate industry to fall within the level four alert, they actually are not on the list. There is a train of thought which I'm now presenting by way of an opinion to a lot of people that because level four can potentially assist essential workers, there might be a role to play for estate agents who can show that they are assisting essential workers. So something which hasn't been canvassed as yet, and I'm putting it out there tonight for the first time, that if you are an estate agent and obviously you are not able to perform, you're only able to work at home because currently the 29th of April regulations and the 30th of April regulations and, of course, the table, which is table one, which delineates who's an essential worker, estate agents don't fall within that rubric, not until we get to level three and level two. But if they are assisting, for example, a nurse who would be an essential worker, that essential worker is entitled to move to find accommodation in order to enable them to perform their essential service. So there is an argument to be made that an estate agent could assist that person. So whilst they can't work per se, they can if they can show and they can prove that they are providing assistance to an essential worker, that they might be able to not only allow for them to be finding accommodation, but potentially be doing an incoming and an outgoing inspection, as the case may be. So that's the process I'm busy formulating at the moment. But the logic is that tenants can't move. And I think the biggest problem, Zane, is that Minister Dlamini Zuma, you know, made this regulation of this sort of moratorium between the 1st and the 7th of May as a once-off relocation. That, of course, is designed for those people who are not in the residence they should have been but for the lockdown, which came along quite suddenly. This is a sort of no permit needed, go back to the place where you should have been, be with the ones that you love, because you are deemed to be stranded, for want of a better word. But it's not an opportunity for you to suddenly leave the premises and move elsewhere. That is not what it's designed for, and that's going to incur the wrath of the SAPS.
Mm. It says a tenant move or vacate premises during the alert on level four. You can only do that. A person may only leave their place of residence, perform essential or permitted services, go to work where a permit has been issued, buy permitted goods, obtain allowed services, move children as allowed, and walk or run a cycle from 6 o'clock to 9 o'clock. So there is absolutely nothing in terms of, okay, I want to move out of this house because my my lease has come to its end and my contract has come to its end, or I actually want to live in a different town because I don't even think you can take a job offer in a different town if you are doing a normal thing except for when you are doing an essential service. What happens if my tenant does move during alert level four?
Then it's a very, very simple answer. It's unlawful. I mean, you know, there are many tenants who are quite desperate because firstly, their contracts come to an end and they have to continue paying even though there's no contract, because as you know or may not know, in terms of the current regulations, if a tenant is obliged, whether he likes it or not, to remain at the residential premises, to that respect, he is still liable to pay or she's still liable to pay rental or rental consideration because they still have use and enjoyment of the property. If they decide to leave, my best advice to estate agents is to let these people go, because I cannot have these amazing estate agents being complicit in these tenants breaking the law. And it's not that they want to break the law, Zane. It's not that they want to face the criminal. But they're desperate. They want to get out, and they want to find maybe alternative premises which are lower priced, or they want to move into new premises where they may have paid a deposit and a first month's rental. So they're stuck in a situation where they've got to pay because they're staying, and they can have a letter of demand sent for non-payment. They can have their lease cancelled for non-payment, and yet they've paid a deposit and rental for new premises. So it's a totally strange dichotomy that they're in. But as things stand on a literal reading of the regulations, as they stand right now, if a tenant decides to leave the premises to move out and they're not an essential service provider or essential worker in terms of what the law prescribes, then they are breaking the law. It's just regretful that the word essential service doesn't pertain to everybody, because Zane, you tell me this, if I'm providing food on my table, irrespective of the job that I do, am I not providing an essential service?
No. The key thing here is, and I'm looking at the fact that the deeds office is now open and will be functioning from the 1st of May 2020 going onwards, and we're chatting this evening to Marlon Chevely, who's a property lawyer, giving us advice about how your rentals are affected, how the fact that you actually buy a home is affected during this particular lockdown time. So here's a scenario, Marlon, and you can give us a better insight to this. I've been renting a place for quite some time. I've now bought the house, and before the lockdown, some of the paperwork was done, and now after the lockdown, the rest of the paperwork on level 4 is going ahead. The deeds office is open. The house is now transferred onto my name. The people who are living in the house have now vacated the house. Can I actually move into my new home from a rental premises?
No, you can't. As things stand right now, you cannot, as you just think of it logically, the list that we have clearly specifies not who can leave, but not who cannot leave, but who can leave. If you're not on that list, you can't leave, which creates a bit of a problem, because you've got premises that you've purchased, you've taken transfer of, you want to move in. Potentially, you could be liable for occupational rental. So it's a question of, once transfer happens, it becomes yours. It's registered in the deeds office. It's yours, but you can't take advantage of it. So it's a complete anomaly. Even though the transfer might go through the deeds office, you've got estate agents who still can't perform. They can only work from home. So the whole value chain, the conveyances, can they do the transactions? For example, I've got a permit now because I'm deemed to be essential. I go to work, but I won't be able to go, do a transfer per se, because what if there are certain suspensive conditions which need to be put into place for the transfer to happen? So there's so many loose ends which all fall in together, and that's the problem. So if you've got a property you want to move into, you can't, because you effectively, unless you are part of the essential services, that potential property will stay open, it will stay uninhabited. And where you currently are, even though you don't want to be there, you would be liable to pay, assuming you are renting or just staying and holding over, waiting to move into your brand new house.
Would I actually be able to actually chat to the bank and say, listen, the deeds office is opened and they are transacting, but the rest of the value chain is not working or not effective at the moment. So can I have a stay of occupational rent or something like that?
Well, I mean, the bank doesn't really necessitate, dealing with them with regard to the occupational rental. That's in terms of an operation of the law and what arises out of the sale agreement. But I encourage every rental agent, every landlord, every tenant to approach the bank. I mean, if you think of it logically, going back to rentals, if you're a landlord and you had a brand new tenant that was going to sign the lease, he signed the lease, he's paid the deposit, truthfully, that landlord can't hold that tenant to the lease agreement in terms of the new property, because the landlord's unable to offer the tenant those premises to enjoy because the tenant can't move into those premises. Conversely, that tenant can turn around and say, because of legislation which locks me into where I am and doesn't let me leave, and because that legislation is, in terms of our Roman authors and plenty authority, is actually vis maior, force majeure, an act of God, I could turn around and say, I'm prevented or I'm precluded from paying you, Mr. New Landlord, give me back my money. So the truth of the matter is, if you can bridge this ridiculous situation, and I say it's ridiculous because you've got tenants who are leaving in the dead of night. You've got landlords who are being prevented from doing what we call outgoing inspections, which are a prerequisite in terms of an outgoing tenant. being in a situation where do I give the deposit to the tenant? Do I hold on to it? Because if I do hold on to it, I'm breaching the Rental Housing Act. If I give it back to the tenant, am I then doing myself a disservice for damages which may have appeared at the property? So there's a whole chain of thought now where we have to think logically. And my best suggestion is talk to the banks, do what you can, negotiate, show goodwill, because we are in an unprecedented situation at the moment.
I've got a WhatsApp message from Ernest, and if you are listening to us, we are chatting to Marlon Chevalier, a property lawyer, and we're chatting about the rights of landlords and the rights of tenants and the whole property industry and transferring your property. I've got Ernest who says, good evening, Zane. I have furniture in storage, and can I move it as I'm currently unemployed and cannot afford storage? Will not that not be seen as, effectively it's not moving house, but he just wants his furniture out of storage.
The fact of the matter is, if furniture is in the property, I would say it's deemed to be occupation. You know, the fact is that it's really an expensive storage fee. But you have to think of it logically. Does the current regulations provide for you to be able to go and take that furniture and remove it? Unless I see something in the regulations which provides an exception that you don't have to be an essential worker, but you've left prior to lockdown, but you've got furniture situated in those premises. Until I see something which says you're allowed to leave your premises to go do that, it's not allowed. I only see that I'm allowed to go jogging from 6 to 9 in the morning. I only see that I'm allowed to go to a funeral, or I'm allowed to relocate to my previous residence in a once-off move between the 1st and 7th of May. I see nothing in the regulations. And I think it's very, very important to state, Zane, that the regulations are promulgated in terms of the disaster regulations. The disaster regulations is law, and there are punitive measures in place for breaking the law. So, you know, there may be furniture removal companies which are businesses which may be able to work, but a private residence and private furniture being moved, I do not see that being allowed until someone proves me to the contrary.
Yeah. 0214460567. We'd love to hear from you. And 0725671567. Are you stuck in a rental property? You want to get out of the rental property and move to a different rental property? Are you stuck in a rental property and you need to move into your own house? Are you stuck in your own house and you've actually sold this particular home and you need to move into another home? We'd love to hear from you. 0214460567. 0725671567. Marlon, what is my recourse to the law in terms of if I'm a landlord, for instance? What is my recourse to the law if the tenant just vacates a property in the middle of the night with the deposit, for instance? Any other damages and stuff like that?
Well, the landlord always has the right to pursue legal action. And if it's a small enough amount, less than 20,000 Rand, then, of course, we have the amazing small claims courts that can assist you. Of course, you can also approach the Rental Housing Tribunal. The Rental Housing Tribunal has, in many respects, the jurisdiction of the Magistrates Court. Any order that they make in terms of Section 1313 of the Rental Housing Act is deemed to be an order of court. But the truth of the matter is, if they leave in the dead of night and you can't do an outgoing inspection because you can't break the law yourself, it's going to be a very difficult issue to try and work out, because ultimately you can only determine damages to a property if you can marry up an incoming inspection and an outgoing inspection. So that's going to be a very interesting avenue that we as litigators at my firm will experience. But you've always got the right to pursue outstanding rental, damages to the property, allocating the deposit towards that. And if the deposit isn't enough, you can then decide to pursue for the legal action for anything in excess of that. But it comes down to rands and cents. So the landlord definitely has rights. As long as the landlord is not deemed to be complicit in assisting the tenant to leave. If I tell you 100 agents, let the tenant go if they want to break the law. You've got the deposit. I believe that the deposit should be refunded in terms of the Rental Housing Act, because it's prescriptive. The latest date by which you can refund the deposit, depending on the situation, is either 7 days, 14 days from the date they gave the property back to you, or 21 days from the date the lease was actually over. But in that instance, the landlord says, don't you dare get my deposit, because I'm not getting any rental from them. So there's going to be a lot of litigation, Zane, which plays the hands of lawyers, fortunately or unfortunately.
Yeah, I can see that happening definitely because, you know, if it's a situation of moving and the deposit, there are certain requirements for the deposit to be paid back and people turn around and say, I think this is just one of those can of worms. Mel out in Musenberg has a question for you, Marlon. Mel, very good evening and your question for Marlon.
Good evening to you, Zane. Good evening to you, Marlon. I have just one question. What happens to a deed that has been lodged prior to the lockdown? What's going to happen to it now? Will it have to be relodged or can it still come up? What happens?
Well, look, I've never professed to be a conveyancer and I always decide to surround myself with far cleverer than lawyers than I am. But from a purely logistic perspective, if the deed was lodged, it would be subject, no doubt, to certain suspensive conditions, etc., and being registered. Any registrations would have been on hold while the deed office was closed. So if it was lodged prior to lockdown, obviously it will come up for registration at a certain stage. The bigger problem is those offers to purchase, for example, which was subject to a bond being granted. And if the bond was not granted because the period of time expired, because there wasn't a hold on the time period within the deed of sale, you may have to do a brand new agreement. So there's a lot of trains of thought there, but I would think that a deed that is lodged prior to lockdown would be able to be carried over, unless, of course, there were certain extraneous circumstances that would hold up the registration apart from lockdown. So I think it's going to be a very busy deeds office once they are officially open and sanitized.
There we go. Mel out in Musenberg, hopefully that answers your question. Yeah. Thanks very much. Marlon Chevalier, a property lawyer. If you have any questions for Marlon, give us a call, 0214-460-567. Another property question coming in from Rensha out in Jeffreys Bay. Rensha, very good evening to you and welcome to Cape Talk.
Evening, Zane. Hi, Marlon. Rensha from Jeffreys Bay. I've got a tenant that gave notice and was supposed to move out the end of March. They can't afford the rent because his wife is pregnant and there's a problem with the fetus. They need extra money and got a cheaper property to rent. They want to move and can't wait until after the lockdown, as they have to go to Cape Town for the birth in July. So I don't know what to answer anymore because they've put the father-in-law on me because he's in the police and he said that they can move now in the first 7 days of May, and I kept on saying, no, I'm sorry, they're not allowed to.
Look, I'm going to answer that as logically as I can. The logical answer is no, obviously, for the simple reason that they're not relocating in terms of the once-off dispensation to previous residencies where they would have been. They're moving to new premises, of course, as a result of childbirth or a pregnant woman, factors which I completely understand. I mean, the law isn't always logical. The truth of the matter is that if they are going to leave and they're dead set on leaving, irrespective of what their father-in-law says, then they must go. I'm not saying hold them in there and lock them in there. Let them go because you can't be held back. You, as long as you're not doing anything which is complicit, let them go and relocate. And if hypothetically they are pulled over and asked where their permit is and they can't produce that permit, well, then they're going to have to try use some mitigating circumstances when they are criminally charged. Maybe they'll get lucky without being pulled over. But the question is, can't force a tenant to remain where they are. You've got all your rights and obligations in terms of the law, as long as you can't be seen to be saying, you know what, I'm going to help you move out. There are going to be tenants who are going to leave whether you like it or not. And the fact is that this is because of the lockdown being extended. We all thought maybe, you know, hopefully or opportunistically that we'd be back at work on the 17th of April. We don't know when we're going to be back. We don't know when level 3 is going to kick in. And in Cape Town, hang on, who's to say we won't be kicked back into level 5? So we've got a really, really difficult situation ahead of us. We just need to think logically, negotiate, but to take a chance of a potential criminal sanction, for me, that just doesn't sit well with me at all.
Yeah, I agree.
That's Renshaw out in Jeffreys Bay. Renshaw, I hope you get that sorted. Yeah, it's kind of difficult when, you know, you have to be in Cape Town for the birth, and it's a very, very difficult situation to be in. And I think it's time, this time is the time where tenants and landlords should be actually chatting more to each other and communicating more about things. I know somebody was telling me over the weekend that their landlord said, look, you have to pay me 10,000 rand, but pay me what you can, because you're not working as well as your brother's not working. So pay us what you possibly can, and we can look at the rest of that when we actually get to you know, out of level 3 or level 4. Sharona out in Bloburg, another question for you this evening, Marlon. Marlon Chevely is our property lawyer. Good evening to you, Sharona. Your question for Marlon?
Hi, good evening, and good evening to Mr. Chevely.
Hello, Sharona.
I wonder if you could tell me, I'm living in premises that I can no longer afford. I've given notice. I'm due to leave. But when I arrived, the landlord did not do an incoming inventory. And now she says she's keeping the deposit, which is 2 months' rent, because of damages. But
I can tell you straight away that she's going to be very hard-pressed to prove any right to retain that deposit. The Rental Housing Act in Section 5, Subsection 3 is very clear. There needs to be an incoming and there needs to be an outgoing. And we actually dealt with it a little bit earlier that if you cannot have an outgoing inspection, that's one thing. But if there's no incoming inspection, there's no record of the defects at the premises as you moved in. In fact, prior to moving in, you've got to have an incoming inspection. So even if, hypothetically, the property is tremendously damaged, and I'm sure it isn't, you don't find that, who would damage the property, she is duty-bound to refund your deposit because the property is deemed to be returned in the condition in which it was received, irrespective of any damages. That's how strong the need is for an ingoing and outgoing inspection. So if I were you, I would approach the Rent Housing Tribunal without delay, and they will adjudicate this matter at no cost in order to ensure that the deposit plus the interest that is accrued on it is refunded to you ASAP.
Sharona, thanks very much out in Bloburg. And that deposit obviously has got to be kept in an interest-bearing account or a trust account, Mon?
Absolutely. As long as you can show the interest that is accrued on it, because in terms of the Rental Housing Act, it's deemed to be invested in an interest-bearing account. So by law, even if you don't have it in your lease agreement, it's deemed to be invested and the interest accrues to the tenant. So absolutely, there would be an amount of interest that has obviously been added onto that deposit. But why they didn't do an incoming inspection is a fatal, fatal mistake on behalf of the landlord.
Yeah, and the thing is, we have technology these days, so it's not a major problem, actually, you know, for people to actually kind of do the necessary ingoing inspection. Because if you don't do an ingoing inspection, you cannot deem to have done an outgoing inspection and now want to charge me for things that you initially haven't seen. Peter out in Tableview, and it looks to me like the landlords are taking a bit of a beating this evening. Peter, very good evening to you and welcome. Your question for Marlon?
Good evening to you, folks. Hi, Marlon. Marlon, this is not me personally. It's somebody I know in a situation. Here's my take on it. As an outside observer, what in a situation where there's an unscrupulous landlord who serially and repeatedly never returns deposits to tenants and always adds up the costs of repairing and fixing and things so that it is equal to or exceeds the tenant's deposit, and the tenant's deposit is at least 2 months' rent, and at least, say, over a year, at least three tenants have not had 1 cent refunded. It is just not possible. And you've got all these terribly upset tenants. It's one case at a time, and it's one individual at a time, but it's happening to a lot of individuals. What comeback does a person have in a situation like that?
Marlon, your advice for Peter in Tableview?
I think I know that landlord. In fact, I think I know 100 of them.
Okay. Oh, really? Okay.
The really big misperception is, and I'm just being facetious, the big misperception is that a landlord thinks that the deposit is his gold mine. He believes he can use this to beautify the property, to restore it to some beautiful condition for the next tenant, but that's not what the deposit is for. What the landlord focuses on is the fact that what is the tenant going to do? I'm going to use the whole deposit, and I'm going to prove that it's not fair wear and tear. I'm going to do the incoming, do the outgoing, and make sure conveniently that the entire deposit is wiped out. That is exactly what the Rental Housing Tribunal is there for. And what the tribunal does is they adjudicate the matter, and they say, show me the incoming, show me the outgoing. And I would love for these tenants to go to the tribunal, because if there are three tenants, and it's the same property or a similar property, and it's the same landlord, the tribunal are no fools, and they'll say, who's the common denominator in this equation? I mean, the tenant, without having to spend money on an attorney, not that I'm trying to do myself out of work, but I would lodge a complaint and unfair rental practice. And what I would do is I would ask the tribunal to make a ruling that this landlord is a serial, not a slumlord, but a serial defaulter, because the tribunal doesn't look kindly on landlords that try and effectively screw over tenants. And I can assure you right now, there is no way that an entire deposit, especially equivalent to 2 months' rental, should be used if you have looked after the property, as well as the fact that you've had the rights to fix up the property before it's returned, because that's the duty of the tenant, to restore the property back to the landlord in the condition which you received it. I rarely see tenants cause damages in excess of 2 months' rental. Why would they do that? And why would it be the same kind of landlord that's involved in these disputes?
That's Peter out in Tableview, and serial landlords are serial killers out there. Marlon Chevalier, property lawyer, answering your questions about exactly what are your rights as a landlord, and also what are your rights as a tenant. Quinton out in Sunbird Park, you signed a lease, and then something else happened. Quinton, very good evening. Your question for Marlon shortly, quickly, please.
Good evening, gentlemen, and thank you for your time, Marlon, in this dramatic times. About a month or so later on, after signing the lease, he then signed a deed of sale at the lawyers with witnesses and all that, and there was no suspense of conditions. This doctor, he's like supposed to have taken occupancy, and this is like a year and a half down the line, and no further, how can I say, finances, or he's made promises of payment even up to a week ago, and that he wants to move in. But it is quite a large property, and he wants to use it for medical purposes and so on. But so far, nothing has happened. What do you suggest? Should I enforce the deal, or what do you suggest?
Quinton, Marlon, your answer for Quinton?
I just want to find a Quinton. Are you a tenant, and it's been purchased by a third party, or what? I just want to get clarity on that.
No, the applicant, the lessee, is a doctor. And he now offered to purchase the property a month or so later after signing the lease and paying a deposit on the lease. Yeah, so then okay. A month or so. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I think what happened here, Marlon, is that a lease was basically signed, and then a month or two later, he put in an offer to purchase.
But no suspensive conditions.
No suspensive conditions. So, Quinton, are you currently living in this particular property?
No, I've vacated the premises for him and tried his best to renovate it.
Okay. So he put in an offer to purchase. He signed a deal with you for 2 months and put in an offer to purchase. Marlon, your advice?
If there wasn't special conditions, then there would have been nothing holding the agreement being perfected. So it's really curious. What I would do is I would love to see the offer to purchase. But ultimately, you need to put him to terms. He needs to fulfill the contract, specifically perform, take ownership of it. Alternatively, he must get out of it and refund whatever amount of money that you may have suffered. And the fact is that without suspensive conditions or resolutive conditions, the deal should have been done a long time ago and should have been registered and should have been a purchase price paid. So the fact that he hasn't done that doesn't show, you know, any interest on his part to go forward with it. But that in turn could result in you having a claim for damages that you suffered. You moved out in anticipation that he would move in. So it's quite a commixture of issues there, which would require an attorney, a rental attorney or a conveyancer, to assess to determine what your rights are. But it all turns on the contract and what the intention of the parties were in terms of their contract.
There we go. That's the answer for Quinton out in Sunbird Park, chatting to Marlon Chevalier, who is our property lawyer. And Marlon, I think we're getting peppered this evening with quite a number of questions in terms of, especially under the COVID conditions, what is, we can and cannot do, and what are our rights. And it's under these conditions that we sort of highlight what are the rights and what are the non-rights of both tenants as well as lawyers. So we bought another house, and this is Pam out in Archie. Pam, a very good evening to you, and welcome to Cape Talk.
Hello, Zain. Hello, to the attorney. My question is that our offer is, will be going through to the deeds office. Our documentation will be going through to the deeds office, I suppose, once they start in earnest. But my question is, obviously there's no agreement with a new tenant, I mean with a new owner, with as far as occupational rental is concerned, because that is not just something that happened along the way. And then the other thing is, I have a insurance on this household insurance, property insurance on the house that we're currently staying in. So, you know, what are my rights with regards to occupational rental, and what are my obligations as far as retaining the insurance? The property insurance.
Which I think you logically, you know, I mean, I don't know how you can be liable for the insurance if you haven't taken transfer yet. The insurance
At the moment, I have insurance on the property that we are staying in. Transfer is going to happen, and we can't move. So we're going to have to stay here, from what I gather, you know.
Yeah.
Listening to your show.
Pam, if I speak under correctly, correction here, Marlon, if you are living in the property and you can't move out of that property at the moment and you need to move into the other property and you're sort of in the limbo with the lockdown period, the best advice that anybody would give you is to continue paying the insurance where you are staying at the moment.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
Marlon?
Thanks.
To repudiate any claim, God forbid something happens in the property. But in any event, you are liable to pay. I don't believe you'd be liable to pay any occupational rental because you haven't taken occupation of the new property. However, there could be a clause, which I haven't seen in terms of the OTP, the offer to purchase, which calls upon you to pay occupational rental from a specific date. So that in itself could be complicated. It's important to mention that it all turns on what the contract says. You know, sometimes there are force majeure clauses, sometimes there's suspensive conditions, sometimes the contract clearly regulates who or what is liable. So, you know, what I'm saying is where you currently are, I would continue to pay because until lockdown ends, effectively you are stuck where you are. And you don't want to be in a situation where your claim is repudiated by the insurance company for a non-payment of a premium.
No. If you just take a simple thing like a burst geyser, for instance, where you're living at the moment and you've actually cancelled the insurance, you will be held liable to repair that geyser and fix everything up, which could be about 10,000-11,000 rands at any given stage, you know. So it's necessary to listen to the advice of Mr. Marlon Chevalier, who is a property lawyer. Pam in Autry, thank you very much for your call. Marlon, thank you so much for highlighting quite a number of things under these conditions, and as you said, there will be a number of lawsuits and a number of sort of questions and a number of things that will go to trial and to test after this. And I think as a property lawyer, Marlon, you might want to think about certain things to put into a contract when we find ourselves in a situation like this again.
Absolutely. I think there's definitely going to be some new force majeure clauses that we are preparing, and representing landlords and tenants, we are thinking out the box in many respects. So, yeah, these are unprecedented times, but it will create a lot of precedent in our courts for, you know, whatever happens in the future, yeah. And may not be a pandemic of this nature. But I'm sure there are a lot of positives that are coming out. We are, you know, learning more about each other and our families. There's a lot of negatives as well, but hopefully we all come through this safe and healthily and grow stronger from it, Zane.
Marlon, thank you so much for your time and look forward to seeing you probably under level 1 or level 2.
I hope so. Have a lovely evening, Zane. Thank you.
Thank you.